If this is your first time, or if you've forgotten from the last couple of weeks, we're doing a series on the covenants of the Old Testament as a reading guide for the Old Testament, so that you have a sense of the whole structure of God's plan for salvation that helps you interpret the little pieces of His Word and where they fall in the progression of these covenants. So if you remember, our definition of a covenant from O. Palmer Robertson was a bond in blood sovereignly administered. In other words, a contract between people that has very serious circumstance or serious consequences if it's broken. And Robertson makes the point that often it's from a sovereign position. God imposes these covenants. It's not like we negotiate them somehow. And if you'll remember, our first week we said that one of the themes that we're going to see all the way through the covenants is the God with us principle, the Emmanuel principle, that the purpose of God's plan of redemption all the way through is to bring us back together with Him, to dwell with Him. And so that's the purpose all the way through, is to restore what was lost there, that we used to be with God. Adam talked with Him in the cool of the evening, walking together. And over the course of all of history, He's restoring that fellowship of God with us. Last week we looked at the covenant with Adam, the promises that were made to Adam and Eve after they fell as part of the curse that was pronounced. There was a promise made, very simple and not very clear or not very detailed description of salvation that was coming, that a seed of the woman would crush the seed of the serpent. And now this week we're going to look at the covenant with Noah. This one's going to look a little more clearly like a covenant than what we looked at last week. And there's going to be a lot more of the pieces that we talked about the very first week. So if you want to turn to Genesis chapter 6, I've just listed a few passages there that we're going to read and given you some space for notes before we get into the categories that we look at each week. So if you know about the covenant with Noah, which you may not, you may think of the interaction between God and Noah after the flood. But the covenant is actually mentioned before the flood, and that's what we're going to look at here first, briefly. But that should help you remember to think about the whole Noah's whole experience as part of this covenant. It's not just when God talked to him after the flood. But the promise of the flood was coming, Noah's response to that promise, all those things are all part of this covenant. It's not just the things we're going to read after the flood. So to catch you up on biblical history from where we were last week to here, Adam and Eve were cursed so that they would have pain in childbirth. It would be hard to bring things out of the ground. And they were told that there would be two kinds of people, the seed of the serpent and the seed of the woman. That's something that we'll see through the whole rest of the Bible. And leading up to this point where we're going to start reading, things have been getting worse and worse and worse. The seed of the serpent has certainly expanded until you get to the point where we are now, where there is one faithful family remaining. And so in terms of this, of all of humanity, it's far more the seed of the serpent than it is the seed of the woman remaining faithful to God. So God looks at the earth, and it says that He was sorry that He made man on this earth, that He was grieved by that sin, and He decides He's going to destroy the earth. But then He comes to Noah, and He tells him that He's going to bring a flood, and he needs to build an ark. That's where we pick things up. Chapter 6, verse 18. We'll go through the end of the chapter there. And God says to Noah, "But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds according to their kinds, and of the animals according to their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind, two of every sort shall come in to you to keep them alive. Also take with you every sort of food that is eaten, and store it up. It shall serve as food for you and for them." Noah did this, and he did all that God commanded him. So you see here, God promises that He will establish His covenant with Noah. And we'll see that formally done after the flood. But He tells him He's going to establish a covenant with him, but it's not just with Noah. It's not just Noah that's going to be saved. It's Noah and his whole family, and it's Noah and a little tiny bit of every kind of creature on this earth. That's something that we'll see come up again after the flood. This is a covenant that isn't just concerned with one person. This is concerned with all of creation. And one thing I wanted to point out before we move on to the next section of this, that if you're in chapter 6 there and you look at verses 8 and 9, you notice before that God had been talking about how horrible things have gotten. In verse 8 it says, "But Noah found favor or grace in the eyes of the Lord." Then it's in the next verse that it says Noah was a righteous man. And if you're just reading through that, you would think, well, he found favor because he was a righteous man. But knowing the rest of Scripture, we know that that's not really the way that it works. That God extends grace, and that is where our righteousness comes from. And so here's another instance where the order is grace and then righteousness. And that's not the way that we usually hear the story of Noah. We say, well, Noah was such a good guy that God decided to save him and his family. But in reality, God chose to extend grace to this one last family on earth, and so that they would be righteous and so that he could save them from the flood. So the bad news was then for the rest of humanity that the flood did come. And if you skip ahead to chapter 8, the flood has happened. Noah and his family have survived, and they get out of the ark. And we're going to pick up there with what Noah does right away after the flood. Chapter 8, verse 20 through 22. "Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, 'I will never again curse the ground because of man. For the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I have done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease.'" So we'll pick it up again here in a second, but I just want to look at this section first. God makes the first of his promises here to Noah. And he promises that he's not going to destroy the whole world by a flood again. He's not going to kill every living creature ever again. But what's his reason for it? If you look at verse 21, he says, "I will never again curse the ground, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth." What he's saying here is the reason he had to destroy the earth was because man was evil. And he knew that this was going to keep happening. This wasn't a problem that had been solved yet. Man was going to keep being sinful. And so the promise here is even that because man is sinful, because man was going to keep deserving that punishment over and over again, God had to withhold his wrath and promises that he's not going to destroy the world. He's going to hold himself back. And so it's because if he gave the wrath that we deserved every time we deserved it, there wouldn't be time for the plan of redemption to be worked out. So in a sense, this is a covenant of God's patience. It's a covenant of his long-suffering. His willingness to allow sin to continue, even though it deserves this kind of punishment, so that he can accomplish the salvation of his people. And then moving on, we're going to keep reading in chapter 9 for the next 7 verses. And God continues to sort of do this covenant in parts. So in chapter 9, verses 1 through 7, he says, "And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, upon everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. And as I gave you the green plants, I give you everything. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is its blood. And for your lifeblood I will require a reckoning. From every beast I will require it, and from man. From his fellow man I will require a reckoning for the life of man. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image. And you, be fruitful and multiply. Teem on the earth and multiply on it. Now, if some of these words sound familiar, it's because they're very similar to words that God says to Adam when they're first created. He tells them to be fruitful, to multiply. So God reiterates this with Noah. He's telling them, it's in a sense, I'm starting over with you. And that's not really the way it works in the greater plan, but he's saying, these things still apply. I need you to work this ground. I need you to be fruitful, to subdue this creation. But he gives them a few things here to help them survive. You notice that he tells them that they can now eat meat. We don't know for sure if people were eating meat before the flood, but we certainly have a divine sanction of it here. That you can now eat the animals as well as the plants. Because God needs people to survive to continue this plan of redemption. He gives them capital punishment. He says, if man sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. And each of these things are things that God has put in place to preserve the world. To preserve us, to give us the food we need, to give us a government structure that keeps violence in check. All so that this plan of redemption can keep going. Basically, if we were left without these promises, without these directions, we would destroy each other. The world would be destroyed. And so God gives us these promises so that the history can continue, so that His plan can be completed. I'm not sure what it means that He holds animals accountable for shedding the blood of men. That's a mystery we may just have to wait until we get to heaven to find out about. There are some pieces in here a little hard to understand. But there's a sense in which every living thing that takes human life is held accountable, and that includes us. That includes the animals. We get this idea here that life is sacred. This is a simple principle. This is a place that we have more and more today in our culture having to hold on to this, that what God says about not shedding the blood of man because they're made in God's image. This is the reason that we protect life in this world. So you can think about some modern places where we need to be reminded of that. So moving on to the rest of this passage, we've got to keep moving through here. I'm going verses 8 through 17. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, "Behold, I will establish my covenant with you and your offspring after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every beast of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. It is for every beast of the earth. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant that I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth." God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth." God reiterates here that He's not going to destroy the world with a flood again. And we know later on from Peter's, I think it's in 2 Peter, he says it's not going to be water the next time, it's going to be fire the next time. So it is important to remember God's saying, "I won't destroy the world by flood again." But He is going to destroy the world eventually. But this sign of the covenant, what does it mean that He has placed His bow in the clouds? Can any of the kids tell me what it means that God's bow is in the clouds? What is He talking about there? When He refers to God's bow in the clouds. I saw you mouth it, Olivia. A rainbow. That's right. This is a rainbow. And if you think about the rainbow like a bow and arrow, which way is the bow pointed? Toward God. That's right. This is a bow pointed up. And This is one of the first places we have this idea that God is taking upon Himself the responsibility to keep His covenant. So something that we'll see later with the covenant with Abraham, that He's the one who takes the oath on Himself, what some people call a self-maledictory oath, basically saying, I'm taking upon myself the consequences for whatever happens with this covenant. God is pointing the bow at Himself, saying, if I ever break this covenant, if anything ever breaks this covenant, I am the one who's held responsible for this. And you'll notice He says the sign is for Him. And again, I'm not sure how this works. God remembers things all the time, but He still tells us the sign is, He says, when I see it in the clouds, I will remember not to flood the earth. And obviously it's for us too. I mean, when we see the rainbow, we remember God's not going to flood us again. But it is a sign where God is saying He's taking this responsibility upon Himself. So those are sort of the nuts and bolts of this covenant. And we're going to go through it and talk about the blessings and responsibilities. But does anyone have questions at this point? Alrighty. So for promised blessings, again, we've covered these categories last week, and hopefully we'll keep doing that as we go forward. I've already talked about this a little bit, but God will never again curse the ground or kill all living creatures. This is something that He's not going to do again. We can rest in that promise. He also says that seed time and harvest, day and night, will continue as long as the earth exists. And we'll talk in a moment about how important that is today when you think about this, but these are part of humanity being able to survive. We need to have that regular cycle of seasons. We need to have day and night. And if those things get off, it endangers life all around the planet. As we already said, man may now eat meat. This is not a covenant promise we often think about, but I think it's a pretty great promise. And it's a great provision for us to be able to survive, that animals can consolidate some of those calories into an easier package for us to eat. And so that's part of God's blessing to us and keeping us sustained so that His plan of salvation will happen. And overall, as I've already said, these promises, this covenant is about the world continuing so that salvation can come. He's promised that the seed of the serpent will be crushed someday. But for that to happen, the world needs to survive. We need to have this world continue. Now, some people look at this covenant and say, well, this is a covenant purely of grace. There are no works. There's no faithful response here. But there certainly was faithful response. Certainly at the very beginning, Noah had to faithfully respond by building the ark. And there's been lots of speculation about what that would have been like to spend that many hundred years working on something that other people would have been laughing at you for and things like that. That was no small feat. It was certainly a difficult work that Noah was called to, and he responded faithfully. We also are called to subdue and fill the earth. The creation mandates that were given when Adam and Eve were created continue. They're still supposed to respond to God's promise to continue the world, to not destroy the world. They're supposed to respond to that by working the ground and by being fruitful and filling the earth. We're also supposed to recognize the sanctity of life. We're not supposed to ever think that someone made in the image of God can just be tossed aside and can be that their lives don't matter. Simply by being made in the image of God, the life of a person has value. Right. Yeah, it's a very different setting for life than what we experience. When you're the only family on earth, it's hard to imagine exactly what that was like. Adam and Eve, obviously, you know, when you live for 950 years, you can have a lot of kids. And so they presumably had many generations there, and they had to marry closer relatives at that point. You do notice that Noah's sons brought their wives with them. So they had wives already, but then their kids would have had to be married cousins and so forth. But God preserved the human race. He preserved us, and we survived because of these great promises. Now, how did Jesus fulfill this covenant? I'll admit that some of the other covenants have a little bit more details that are specifically fulfilled in Him. But you may have noticed that as we read in chapter 8, before we get to all the promises that God makes here after the flood, it starts with a sacrifice. That Noah sacrifices to God. God smells the sweet aroma of the sacrifice, and then He gives all these blessings. And so we have this idea that God requires sacrifice. And Jesus is that sweet-smelling sacrifice. We're told that explicitly in Ephesians 5, verse 2, that He is the sweet-smelling sacrifice that saves us. And so that's one picture of this covenant that's fulfilled. We also see in Jesus' own way that He came to earth, a sign of the same patience that God shows to people. That Jesus was expected to come in judgment and in salvation and in judgment at the same time. A lot of people expected that. But in reality, Jesus came in salvation and is going to come back in judgment. You have this prolonging of time so that more people can be saved. And that's the same thing that we have here with Noah. And then in Matthew 28, we finally have that fulfillment of the gospel going out to the whole world. This covenant was with the whole world to keep the whole world alive so that Jesus could come. And in Matthew 28, He tells us to make disciples of every nation. And so He fulfills that promise to all of creation. It's no longer localized to just a little patch of ground in the Middle East. So what about today? What are the promises that we can still hold on to in our lives today? Well, one of the things that I think we overlook a lot of times in this life is that covenant with Noah means that the promises here mean that we don't have to fear catastrophic changes in the natural order. If you remember some of the great hype around 2012 and the Mayan calendar or whatever it was going to run out, and that meant it was the whole world was just going to implode and it was going to just be terrible everything was going to be thrown off. Or if you listen to the way that some people talk about climate change, it sounds like it's going to be the end of the world and that everything's going to be thrown off and we're not going to have the right seasons. And if you look, you can always find some sort of impending doom of killer bees or whatever. There's always something coming that's going to totally disrupt the natural order. But as Christians, we have a promise that these things are going to continue. It doesn't give us the right to treat the creation badly and to cause problems ourselves, but we don't have to live in fear that the world's going to get hit by an asteroid and blow up before Jesus returns or something like that. We don't have to be crippled by those kinds of fears because God has said the seasons will continue. Day and night will continue. And that's a pretty simple but profound promise. We also need to remember that this time that we have, I'm not sure why I put this under promises, it's not really a promise, but the time that we have is time for us to spread the gospel. That God is being patient, just like He was patient after the time of Noah. He's being patient so that salvation can be brought to more people. So that God should destroy the earth right now because of our sin, but He's being patient. So what are we doing with that time that we've been given? That extra time that maybe that person next door, maybe that person in our family has just enough time to come to the Lord before the end of the earth. And that's a different way to think about the time that we've been given when you think about God's patience and long-suffering. One thing I didn't put down on your sheet, partly because I'm not exactly sure how to articulate it, is there are some implications here in this covenant for covenant families. You see that Noah was saved along with his family. And we see in that next generation that Ham already was rebellious, was already sinning against God and turning his back on God. And so even in a family where a child ends up turning his back on the faith, there's a sense in which a family is blessed in the covenants of God, that He treats us as families. And so that's part of why one of the side reasons, but it's part of why we baptize our kids, because kids are part of families and we're blessed together in God's covenant. That's the way He's always interacted with us as families. Any questions at this point? Well, we won't be able to look at these Old Testament readings today, but I commend them to you as sort of samples of ways that understanding the covenant with Noah can help you in your readings, but things to look for as you are reading the Old Testament. And these terms and ideas to pick up on that should make you think about the covenant with Noah. One of the important things is God's rule over nature, is God's rule over creation, over the elements. We saw that in some of the Psalms we sang this morning. He controls snow and ice. He controls all these things. And that's a good reminder that God is the one who's sustaining this world. You also see, anytime you see Baal worship, you might say, well, what does Baal worship have to do with Noah? But Baal was a fertility god. The god of thunder and wind and some other things, but it was a god of fertility. And many of the old gods were gods of fertility and harvest. And so whenever the people were tempted to go worship these other gods, particularly Baal, when you see that name pop up, you think they're not trusting the promises to Noah. They're not trusting that God said that seed time and harvest would continue. Not trusting God to preserve the natural order. And so anytime you see those sort of worshiping nature, worshiping the sun, that comes up in the Ezekiel passage there. Those are all denials of the promises that God has made. So that should bring the covenant with Noah to mind. Also, any kind of disregard for life, for the value of people, capital punishment, when you see that happening, see God enacting that, these are all parts of this covenant. And then, of course, if you see a rainbow pop up, it doesn't happen very often, but in a vision in, I think in Ezekiel and perhaps in Revelation, there's a place where a rainbow pops up, and you could think about God's promise there to keep His covenant. I hope we haven't blitzed through this too quickly. I know we're running out of time, but I think the covenant with Noah is a tougher one to understand. It's not one that we spend a lot of time thinking about. I've heard a couple of pastors say they think this is one of the more neglected covenants. So I hope that you can sort of chew on some of these things and that will help you as you read your Old Testaments. Are there any questions after this presentation? God made a promise to Adam, a simple and not very detailed promise that salvation was coming. There's that first covenant. The second covenant here is making time for that to happen. That's about all we know right now. There are little bits and pieces of details we've gotten, but that's most of what we have right now about God's plan of salvation. And we'll keep getting more and more. But you've got to be patient and we'll work our way through. So.